This is Audible.
Macmillan Audio presents A Memory of Light, Book 14 of The Wheel of Time, by Robert Jordan and Brendan Sanderson. Read for you by Michael Kramer and Kate Redding.
Matram Cawthon, you bloody fool! You're still alive?
Matt glanced over as Davram Bashir rode up beside him in the early evening darkness. Matt had moved with the Death Watch guard to the back of the Andoran lines fighting at the river. Bashir was accompanied by his wife and a guard of Saldaeans. Judging by the blood on her clothing, she had seen her share of fighting.
"Yes, I'm alive," Matt said. "I'm usually pretty good at staying alive. I've only failed one time that I remember, and it hardly counts. What are you doing here? Aren't you—"
"They dug into my bloody mind," Bashir said, scowling. "That they did, man. Dear and I talked it over. I'm not going to lead, but why should that stop me from killing a few Trollocs?"
Matt nodded. At Tenobia's fall, this man had become king of Saldaea, but he had refused the crown, so far. The corruption in his mind had shaken him. All he had said was that Saldaea fights alongside Melkir, and told the troops to look toward Lan. The throne would be sorted out if they all survived the last battle.
"What happened to you?" Bashir asked. "I heard the command post fell."
Matt nodded.
"The Shanshan have abandoned us."
"Blood and ashes!" Bashir cried. "As if this weren't bad enough. Bloody Shanshan dogs!"
The Death Watch guards who stood around Matt made no response to that. Elaine's forces held along the riverbank, just barely, but Trollocs were slowly working around them upriver. Elaine's lines held only because of tenacity and careful training. Each huge square of men held pikes outward, bristling like a hedgehog. Those formations could be separated if Demandra drove wedges between them in the right way. Matt employed cavalry sweeps of his own, including Andoran cavalry and the band, trying to keep the Trollocs from penetrating the pike squares or surrounding Elaine. The rhythm of the battle pulsed beneath Matt's fingertips. He felt what Demandra was doing. To anyone else, the end of the battle probably seemed a simple matter now. Attack in force, break the pike formations, crack Matt's defenses. It was so much more subtle. Lan's borderlanders had finished crushing the Trollocs upriver and needed orders. Good. Matt needed those men for the next step in his plan. Three of the enormous pike formations were flagging, but if he could place a channeler or two in each center, he could shore them up. Like shelter, whoever had distracted Demandred. The Forsaken's attacks had destroyed entire pike formations. Demandred didn't need to kill each man individually. He needed only to launch attacks of the One Power to shatter the square. That let the Trollocs overwhelm them.
"Bashir," Matt said, "please tell me that someone has heard from your daughter."
"Nobody has," Dira said. "I'm sorry."
Bloody ashes, Matt thought. Poor Perrin. Poor him. How was he going to do this without the horn? Light, he was not certain he could do it with the bloody horn.
"Go," Matt called as they rode. "Ride to Lan. He's upriver. Tell him to engage those Trollocs trying to move around the Andoran's right flank. And tell him I'll have other orders for him coming soon."
"But I—"
"I don't care if you've bloody been touched by the shadow," Matt said. "Every man has had the Dark One's fingers on his heart, and that's the bloody truth. You can fight through it. Now ride to Lan and tell him what needs to be done."
Bashir stiffened at first. Then, strangely, he smiled a broad smile beneath drooping mustaches. Bloody Saldaeans. They liked being yelled at. Matt's words seemed to give him heart, and he galloped off, wife at his side. She threw Matt a fond look, which made him uncomfortable. Now, he needed an army, and a gateway. He needed a bloody gateway. Fool, he thought. He had sent the Damani away. Could he not have at least kept one? Though they did make his skin crawl as if it were covered with spiders. Matt halted Pips, the Death Watch guards stopping with him. A few of them lit torches. They had certainly gotten the drubbing they had wanted, joining Matt in fighting the Sharans. They seemed to itch for more, though. There, Matt thought, healing Pips toward a force of troops south of Elaine's pike formations. The Dragon Sworn. Before the Shanchan left Dashar Nob, Matt had sent this army to reinforce Elaine's troops. He still did not know what to make of them. He had not been at the field when they had gathered, but he had heard reports. People from all ranks and stations, all nationalities, who had joined together to fight in the last battle, heedless of loyalties or national borders. Rand broke all vows and all other bonds. Matt rode at a quick trot, the Death Watch guards jogging to keep up, around the back of the Andoran lines. Light, the lines were buckling. This was bad. Well, he'd made his bet. Now he could only ride the bloody battle and hope it did not buck too much. As he galloped for the Dragon Sworn, he heard something incongruous. Singing? Matt pulled to a halt. The Ogier had been caught up fighting the Trollocs, and had pushed across the dry riverbed to help fight at Elaine's left flank, across from the bogs, to keep Trollocs from coming around that way. They stood their ground here, as immovable as oaks before a flood, hacking with axes as they sang. Trollocs lay in piles around them.
"Loyal!"
Matt yelled, standing up in his stirrups.
"Loyal!"
One of the Ogier stepped back from the fighting and turned. Matt was taken aback. His usually calm friend had ears laid low, teeth clenched in anger, and a blood-soaked axe in his fingers. Light with that expression sent terror through Matt's body. He would rather stare down 10 men who thought he had been cheating than fight a single angry Ogier. Loyal called something to the others, and then rejoined them in the fighting. They continued to lay into the Trollocs nearby, cutting them down. Trollocs and Ogier were near the same size, but the Ogier somehow seemed to tower over the Shadow Spawn. They did not fight like soldiers, but like woodsmen felling trees. Chop one way, then the next, breaking Trollocs. But Matt knew that Ogier hated felling trees, while they seemed to relish felling Trollocs. The Ogier broke the Trolloc fist they'd been fighting, making them flee. Elaine's soldiers moved in and blocked off the rest of the Trolloc army, and the several hundred Ogier pulled back to Matt. Among them, Matt noticed, were more than a few of the Shanchan Ogier, the gardeners. He had not ordered that. The two groups fought together, but barely seemed to look at one another now. Every one of the Ogier, male and female, had numerous cuts on their arms and legs. They did not wear armor, but many of the cuts seemed trivial, as if their skin had the strength of bark. Loyal walked up to Matt and the Death Watch guards, raising his axe to his shoulder. Loyal's trousers were dark up to the thighs, as if he had been wading in wine.
"Matt," Loyal said, drawing a deep breath. "We have done as you asked, fighting here. No Trolloc got by us."
"You did well, Loyal," Matt said. "Thank you." He waited for a reply. Something long-winded and eager, no doubt. Loyal stood breathing in and out with lungs that could hold enough air to fill a room. No words. The others with him, though many were senior to Loyal, offered no words either. Some lifted torches. The glow of the sun had vanished beneath the horizon. Night was fully upon them. Quiet Ogier. Now that was strange. Ogier at war, though, it was not something Matt had ever seen. He did not have any memory of it in the memories that were not his.
"I need you," Matt said. "We have to turn this battle around or we're finished. Come on."
"The Horn Sounder commands," Loyal bellowed. "Up axes!"
Matt winced. If he ever needed someone to yell a message from Caelan to Kyrian for him, he knew who to ask. Only they would probably hear it all the way up in the Blight, too. He healed Pips into motion, the Ogier falling in around him and the Death Watch guards. The Ogier had no trouble keeping up.
"Honored one," Kareed said. "I and mine are ordered to..."
"To go die on the front lines. I'm bloody working on that, Kareed. Keep your sword out of your own gut for the moment, kindly."
The man's expression darkened, but he held his tongue.
"She doesn't really want you dead, you realize," Matt said.
He could not say more without revealing the plot to bring her back.
"If my death serves the Empress, may she live forever, then I give it willingly."
"You're bloody insane, Kareed," Matt said. "Unfortunately, so am I. You're in good company. You there! Who leads this force?"
They had reached the back ranks, where the reserves of the Dragonsworn were located, the wounded, and those who were resting from their time at the front ranks.
"My lord," one of the scouts said, "that will be Lady Tinna." "Go fetch her," Matt said.
Those dice kept rattling in his head. He also felt a pull from the north, a tugging, as if some threads around his chest were yanking on him.
"Not now, Rand," he thought. "I'm bloody busy."
No colors formed, only blackness, dark as a murdral's heart. That tugging grew stronger. Matt dismissed the vision.
"Not now."
He had work to do here. He had a plan. Light let it work. Tinna turned out to be a pretty girl, younger than he had expected, tall and strong of limb. She wore her long brown hair in a tail, though curls of it seemed to want to break out here and there. She wore breeches and had seen some fighting, judging by that sword on her hip and the dark Trolloc blood on her sleeves. She rode up to him, looking him up and down with discerning eyes.
"You've finally remembered us, have you, Lord Cawthon?"
Yes, she definitely reminded him of Nynaeve. Matt looked up at the heights. The firefight between Aes Sedai and Sharns up there had turned messy.
"You'd better win there, Egwene. I'm counting on you."
"Your army," Matt said, looking at Tinna. "I'm told some Aes Sedai joined you."
"Some did," she said cautiously.
"You're one of them?"
"I am not."
"Not exactly." "Not exactly? What do you mean by that?" "Look, woman, I need a gateway. If we don't have one, this battle could be lost. Please tell me we have some channelers here who can send me where I need to go."
Tinna drew her lips in a line.
"I'm not trying to irritate you, Lord Cawthon. Old habits make for strong ropes, and I have learned not to speak of certain things. I was turned out of the White Tower myself for complicated reasons. I'm sorry, but I do not know the weave for traveling. I do know for a fact that most who joined us are too weak for that weave. It requires a great deal of the One Power, beyond the capacity of any who—"
"I can make one."
A woman in a red dress stood up from the lines of wounded, where she had apparently been healing. She was thin and bony and had a sour expression on her face, but Matt was so happy to see her he could have kissed her. Like kissing broken glass, that would have been. He'd have done it anyway.
"Teslin," he cried. "What are you doing here?"
"Fighting in the last battle, I believe," she said, dusting off her hands.
"Aren't we all?"
"But the Dragonsworn?" Matt asked. "I did not find the White Tower to be a comfortable place once I returned," she said. "It has changed. I availed myself of the opportunity here, as this need superseded any others. Now, you wish a gateway? How large?"
"Large enough to move as many of these troops as we can. The Dragonsworn, the Ogier, and this cavalry banner from the Band of the Red Hand," Matt said.
"I'll need a circle, Tinna," Teslin said. "No complaining that you can't channel. I can sense it in you, and all former allegiances and promises are broken for us here. Gather the other women. Where are we going, Cawthon?"
Matt grinned.
"To the top of those heights."
"The heights," Kareed said. "But you abandoned those at the beginning of the battle. You gave them up to the Shadowspawn."
"Yes, I did."
And now? Now he had a chance to finish this. Elaine's forces holding along the river, Egwene fighting in the west. Matt had to seize the northern part of the heights. He knew that with the Shanchan gone and most of his own troops occupied around the lower part of the heights, Demandred would send a strong force of Sharns and Trollocs across the top to the northeast, to swing down across the riverbed and behind Elaine's armies. The armies of Light would be surrounded and at Demandred's mercy. His only chance was to keep Demandred's troops from coming off the heights, despite their superior numbers. Light. It was a long shot, but sometimes you had to take the only shot you had.
"You're spreading us dangerously thin," Kareed said. "You risk everything by moving armies that are needed here up to the heights."
"You did want to go to the front lines," Matt replied. "Loyal, are you with us?"
"A strike at the enemy's core, Matt?"
Loyal asked, hefting his axe.
"It will not be the worst place I've found myself, following one of you three. I do hope Rand is all right. You do think so, don't you?"
"If Rand were dead," Matt said, "we'd know it. He'll have to watch out for himself, without Matram Cawthon saving him this time. Teslin, let's have that gateway. Tinna, organize your forces. Have them ready to charge through the opening. We need to seize the northern slope of those heights fast, and then hold it no matter what the shadow tosses at us."
Egwene opened her eyes. Though she shouldn't have been in a room at all, she lay in one, and a fine one. The cool air smelled of salt, and she rested on a soft mattress. "I'm dreaming," she thought. Or perhaps she had died. Would that explain the pain? Such terrible pain. Nothingness would be better, far better than this agony. Gawain was gone. A piece of herself snipped away. "I forget how young she is." Whispers drifted into the room. That voice was familiar. "Sylviana? Care for her. I must return to the battle." "How does it go?" Egwene knew that voice, too. Rosil, of the Yellow. She had gone to Mayenne with the novices and accepted, helping heal. "The battle? It goes poorly." Sylviana was not one to put honey on her words. "Watch her, Rosil. She is strong. I do not doubt she will pull through this, but there is always a worry." "I've helped women with lost warders before, Sylviana," Rosil said. "I assure you I'm quite capable. She'll be useless for the next few days, but then she will begin to mend." Sylviana sniffed. "That boy. I should have known he would ruin her. The day I first saw how she looked at him, I should have taken him by his ears, hauled him to a distant farm, and set him to work for the next decade." "You cannot so easily control the heart, Sylviana." "Warders are a weakness," Sylviana said. "That is all they have ever been and all they ever will be. That boy, that fool boy, that fool boy," Egwene said. "Saved my life. From Shanshan assassins. I would not be here to mourn if he had not done so. I would suggest that you remember that, Sylviana, when you speak of the dead." The others were silent. Egwene tried to overcome the pain of loss. She was in Mayenne, of course. Sylviana would have taken her to the Yellows. "I will remember it, Mother," Sylviana said. She actually managed to sound contrite. "Rest well. I will—" "Rest is for the dead, Sylviana," Egwene said, sitting up. Sylviana and Rosil stood in the doorway of the beautiful room, which was draped with blue cloth below the ceiling of worked mother-of-pearl inlays. Both women folded their arms and gave her stern looks. "You've been through something extremely hurtful, Mother," Rosil said. Near the doorway, Lyalwyn stood guard. "The loss of a warder is enough to stop any woman. There is no shame in letting yourself deal with the grief." "Egwene Alvear can grieve," Egwene said, standing up. "Egwene Alvear lost a man she loved, and she felt him die through a bond. The Ammerlin has sympathy for Egwene Alvear as she would have sympathy for any Aes Sedai dealing with such a loss, and then in the face of the last battle, the Amyrlin would expect that woman to pick herself up and return to the fight. She walked across the room, each step firmer. She held out her hand to Sylviana, nodding toward Vora's Sangreal, which she held. "I will be needing that." Sylviana hesitated. "Unless the two of you wish to discover just how capable I am at present," Egwene said softly. "I would not suggest disobedience." Sylviana looked to Rosil, who sighed and nodded reluctantly. Sylviana handed over the rod. "I do not condone this, Mother," Rosil said. "But if you are insistent I am, then I will give you this suggestion. Emotion will threaten to crush you. This is the danger. In the face of a lost warder, summoning Sidar will be difficult. If you do manage it, Aes Sedai's serenity will likely be impossible. This can be dangerous, very dangerous." Egwene opened herself to Sidar. As Rosal had suggested, it was difficult to embrace the source. Too many emotions vied for her attention, overwhelming her, driving away her calm. She blushed as she failed a second time. Sylviana opened her mouth, undoubtedly, to suggest that Egwene sit back down. At that moment Egwene found Sidar, the bud in her mind flowering, the one power rushing into her. She gave Sylviana a defiant look, then began weaving a gateway. "You didn't hear the rest of my advice, Mother," Rosil said. "You will not be able to banish the emotions troubling you, not completely. Your only choice is a bad one, to overwhelm those emotions of grief and pain with stronger emotions." "That should not be difficult at all," Egwene said. She drew a deep breath, pulling in more of the one power. She allowed herself anger, fury at the shadow spawn who threatened the world, anger at them for taking Gawain from her. "I will need eyes to watch me," Egwene said, defying Sylviana's previous words. Gawain had not been a weakness to her. "I will need another warder." "But," Rosil began. Egwene stopped her with a look. "Yes, most women waited. Yes, Egwene Alvear was pained from her loss and Gawain could never be replaced. But she believed in warders. The Amyrlin seat needed someone to watch her back. Beyond that, every person with a warder bond was a better fighter than those without. To go without a warder was to deny the light another soldier. There was a person here who had saved her life." "No," a piece of her said, her eyes falling on Lyalwyn. "Not a Shan Shan." Another piece of her, the Amyrlin, laughed at that. "Stop being such a child. She would have a warder." "Lyalwyn Shipless," Egwene said loudly. "Will you take this duty?" The woman knelt, bowing her head.
Yes.
Egwene formed the weave for the bond. Lyalwyn stood, looking less fatigued, taking a deep breath. Egwene opened a gateway to the other side of the chamber, then used her immediate knowledge of this room to open another one where her people fought. Explosions, screams, and the beating of weapons against shields poured through. Egwene strode back onto the killing fields, bringing the fury of the Amyrlin with her.
Demandred was a blade master. Galad had assumed this would be the case, but he preferred to test his assumptions. The two danced back and forth inside the ring of washing Sharans. Galad wore lighter armor, mail under his tabard, and stepped more quickly. The interwoven coins Demandred wore were heavier than simple mail, but good against a sword.
"You are better than your brother was," Demandred said. "He died easily."
The man was trying to enrage Galad. He did not succeed. "Cold, careful." Galad moved in. The courtier taps his fan. Demendred responded with something very similar to the falcon stoops, slapping away Galad's attack. Demendred stepped back, walking around the perimeter of the ring, sword out to the side. At the beginning he had spoken a great deal. Now he made only the occasional jibe. They circled each other in the darkness, lit by torches held in Sharan hands. One rotation, two.
"Come now," Demendred said. "I'm waiting."
Galad remained silent. Each moment he stalled was a moment Demendred was not sending destruction upon Elaine or her armies. The Forsaken seemed to realize it, for he came in swiftly. Three strikes, down, side, backhand. Galad met each one, their arms a blur. Motion to the side. It came from a rock that Demendred had thrown at Galad by channeling. Galad dodged it, barely, then raised his sword against the blows that came next. Furious strikes downward, the boar rushes down the mountain, crashing against Galad's blade. He held against that, but was not able to stop the following twist of the blade that cut his forearm. Demendred stepped back, his sword dripping Galad's blood. They circled around again, watching one another. Galad felt warm blood inside his glove from where it had seeped down his arm. A little blood loss could slow a man, weaken him. Galad breathed in and out, abandoning thought, abandoning worry. When Demendred next struck, Galad anticipated it, stepping aside and striking down with two hands, biting deeply into the leather behind Demendred's knee guard. The sword glanced off the side of the armor, but cut true otherwise. As Galad whipped back around, Demendred was limping. The Forsaken grimaced.
"You've blooded me," he said. "It has been a very long time since someone did that."
The ground began to heave and break beneath Galad. Desperate, he leaped forward, getting close to Demendred, forcing him to stop channeling, lest he topple himself. The Forsaken grunted, swinging, but Galad was inside his enemy's guard. Too close to do a full swing, Galad raised his sword and bashed it, pommel first, at Demendred's face. Demendred caught Galad's hand with his, but Galad grabbed Demendred by the helmet, holding tightly, trying to force the helmet down over the Forsaken's eyes. He grunted, both men locked, neither moving. Then, with a sickening sound Galad heard quite distinctly, his muscle ripped in the arm where he'd been cut. His sword slipped from numb fingers, his arm spasming, and Demendred threw him backward and struck with a flash of the blade. Galad fell to his knees. His right arm, severed at the elbow by Demendred's slice, flopped to the ground in front of him. Demendred stepped back, panting. He had been worried. Good. Galad held to his bleeding stump, then spat at Demendred's feet. Demendred snorted, then swung his blade once more. All went black. Andral felt as if he'd forgotten what it was like to breathe fresh air. The land around him smoldered and quaked, smoke churning in the wind, bringing with it the stench of burning bodies. He and the others had moved up across the top of the heights to the western side, searching for Taim. Much of the Sharan army fought there, contending with the White Tower army. Groups of channelers drew fire from one side or the other, so Andral crossed the horrid landscape alone. He stepped over broken patches of smoking earth, crouching low, trying to give off the air of a solitary wounded man trying to creep to safety. He still wore Nensen's face, but with his head down and his posture low, that mattered very little. He sensed a spike of alarm from Pivara, who moved alone nearby.
"What is it?" he sent. "Are you all right?"
After a tense moment, her thoughts came.
"I'm fine. A scare with some Sharans. I convinced them I was on their side before they attacked."
"It's a wonder anyone can tell friend from foe here," Andral sent back.
He hoped Amarn and Jonath were safe. The two had gone together, but if they... Andral froze. Up ahead, through the shifting smoke, he saw a ring of Trollocs protecting something. They stood on an outcropping of rock that jutted out of the hillside like the seat of a chair. Andral crept forward, hoping to steal a peek.
"Andral!"
Pervor's voice in his mind made him jump nearly out of his skin.
"What?" "You were alarmed at something," she said. "I was reacting to you."
He took a few calming breaths.
"I found something. Just a moment."
He drew close enough, indeed, to sense channeling inside the ring. He didn't know if... The Trollocs parted as someone inside barked a command. Mishrael peered out, then scowled.
It's only Nensen.
Andril's heart thumped inside his chest. A man wearing black turned from his contemplation of the battle. Taim. In his hands he carried a thin disc of black and white. He rubbed his thumb across it as he overlooked the battlefield, sneering, as if disdainful of the lesser channelers struggling all about him.
Well?
He barked at Andril, turning and dropping the disc into a pouch at his waist.
I saw Andril,
Andril said, thinking quickly. Like the others expected him to approach. He did so, walking past the Trollocs, putting himself right in the belly of the beast. If he could draw close enough.
I followed him for a while.
Nensen always spoke in a rough, gravelly voice, and Andril did his best to imitate it. Bibara could have worked the voice into the weave, but hadn't known it well enough.
I don't care about that one. Fool! What is Demandred doing?
He saw me, Andril said. He didn't like me being over there. He sent me back to you and said that if he saw any of us away from this position, he'd kill us.
Andril, Bibara sent, worried. He couldn't spare the concentration to reply. It took all he had to keep from shaking as he stepped up close to Taim. Taim rubbed his forehead with two fingers, closing his eyes.
And I thought you could do this simple thing.
Taim created a complex weave of spirit and fire. It struck like a viper at Andril. Pain suddenly moved up Andril's body, starting in his feet, surging through his limbs. He screamed, collapsing to the ground.
Do you like that? Taim asked. I learned it from Moradin. I do think he's trying to turn me against Demandred.
Andril screamed in his own voice. That horrified him, but the others did not seem to notice. When Taim finally released the weave, the pain faded. Andril found himself groveling on the dirty ground, his limbs still spasming from the memory of the pain.
Get up!
Taim growled. Andril began to lurch to his feet.
I'm coming, Bibara sent. Stay back, he replied.
Light, he felt powerless. As he stood up, he stumbled into Taim, his legs refusing to work as they should.
Fool!
Taim said, shoving Andril back. Mishrael caught him.
Stand still!
Taim began another weave. Andril tried to pay attention, but he was too nervous to catch the details of the weave. It hovered in front of him, then wrapped around him.
What are you doing?
Andril asked. He didn't have to fake the tremor in his voice.
That pain. You said you saw Andril,
Taim said.
I'm placing a mask of mirrors on you and inverting the weave, making you look like him. I want you to pretend to be the page boy, find Loghain, then kill him. Use a knife or a weave, I don't care which.
You're making me look like Andril,
Andril said.
Andril is one of Loghain's pets, Taim said. He shouldn't suspect you. This is an exceptionally easy thing I'm asking of you, Nensen. Do you think for once you could avoid making a complete mess of it?
Yes, Mihail.
Good.
Because if you fail, I'll kill you.
The weave fell into place and vanished. Mishrael grunted, releasing Andril and stepping back.
I think Andril is uglier than that, Mihail.
Taim snorted, then waved at Andril.
It's good enough. Get out of my sight. Return with Loghain's head, or do not return at all.
Andril scrambled away, breathing heavily, feeling the other's eyes on his back. Once a good distance away, he ducked around some brush that was only mostly burned, and nearly tripped over Pivara, Imaran, and Jonath hiding there.
Andril, Imaran whispered. Your disguise! What happened? Was that Taim?
Andril sat down in a heap, trying to still his heart. Then he held up the pouch that he had pulled off Taim's belt while stumbling to his feet.
It was him. You're not going to believe this, but...
Arganda cupped the piece of paper, sitting in Mighty's saddle and pulling his list of ciphers out of his pocket. Those Trollocs kept launching arrows. So far, he'd avoided being hit. as had Queen Aleandra, who still rode with him. At least she was willing to stay back a little way with his reserves, where she was more sheltered. In addition to the Legion of the Dragon and the Borderlanders, his force, along with the Wolf Guard and the White Cloaks, had moved downriver following the battle at the ruins. Arganda had more foot soldiers than the others, and had trailed behind them. They'd found plenty of fighting here, with the Trollocs and Sharans in the dry riverbed trying to surround the armies of Andor. Arganda had been fighting here for a few hours now as the sun set, bringing on the shadows. He'd pulled back once he got the message, however.
"Bloody awful handwriting,"
Arganda grumbled, flipping through the little list of ciphers and turning it toward a torch. The orders were authentic. Either that or someone had broken the cipher.
"Well?"
Tern asked.
"Cawthon's alive," Arganda said with a grunt. "Where is he?"
"Don't know," Arganda said, folding the paper and tucking away the ciphers.
"The messenger said Cawthon opened a gateway in front of him, threw the letter in his face, and told him to find me."
Arganda turned to the south, peering through the darkness. In preparation for night, his men had brought oil through gateways and set piles of wood alight. By the firelight, he could see the Two Rivers men heading his way, sure as the orders had said.
"Ho, Tamalthor!"
Arganda said, raising a hand. He hadn't seen his commander since parting after the battle at the ruins, hours ago now. The Two Rivers men looked as worn down as Arganda felt. It had been a long, long day, and the fighting was by no means over.
"I wish Galen were here,"
Arganda thought, inspecting Trollocs at the river as all Thor's men approached.
"I could use someone to argue with."
Just downriver, shouts and clangs sounded from where the Andoran's pike formations held off, barely, the Trolloc waves. By now this battle was strung out along the Mora, almost up to Dashar Nob. His men had helped keep the Andorans from being flanked.
"What news, Arganda?"
Tam asked as he came over.
"Cawthon lives," Arganda said. "And that's bloody amazing, considering that someone blew up his command post, set fire to his tent, killed a bunch of his demoni, and chased off his wife. Cawthon crawled out of it somehow."
"Ha!"
Abul Cawthon said.
"That's my boy."
"He told me you were coming," Arganda said. "He said you'd have arrows. Do you?"
Tam nodded.
"Our last orders sent us through the gateway to Mayen for healing and resupply. I don't know how Matt knew arrows would be coming, but a shipment from the women in the Two Rivers came right as we were getting ready to return here. We have longbows for you to use, if you need them."
"I will. Cawthon wants all of our troops to move back upriver to the ruins, cut across the riverbed and march up the heights from the northeastern side."
"Not sure what that's about, but I suppose he knows what he's doing,"
Tam said. Together, their forces moved upriver in the night, leaving behind the fighting Andorans, Kyrianen, and Aiel.
"Creator shelter you, friends," Arganda thought.
They crossed the dry riverbed and began moving up the northeastern slopes. It was quiet on top, at this end of the heights, but the glow from the lines of torches was evident.
"That's going to be a tough nut to crack if those are Sharans up there,"
Tam said softly, looking up the darkened slope.
"Cawthon's notes said we'd have help," Arganda replied.
"What kind of help?"
"I don't know. He didn't..."
Thunder rumbled nearby, and Arganda winced. Most of the channelers were supposed to be fighting on the other side of the heights, but that didn't mean he wouldn't see any here. He hated that feeling, the sensation that a channeler might be watching him, contemplating whether to kill him with fire, lightning, or earth. Channelers. The world would be just plain better without them. But that sound didn't turn out to be thunder. A group of galloping riders bearing torches appeared from the night, crossing the riverbed to join Arganda and his men. They flew the golden crane at the center of an array of Borderlander banners.
"Well, I'll be a bloody Trolloc," Arganda called.
"You Borderlanders decided to join us?"
Landmandragoran saluted by torchlight, silvery sword glistening. He looked up the slope.
"So we're to fight here,"
Arganda nodded.
"Good,"
Land said softly from horseback.
I just received reports about a large Sharan army moving northeast across the top of the heights. It's clear to me they want to swing down around behind our people fighting the Trollocs at the river. Then we'd be surrounded and at their mercy. Looks like it's our job to keep that from happening. He turned toward Tam. Are you ready to soften them up for us, Archer?
I think we can manage that, Tam replied.
Lan nodded, then raised his sword. A Melchiori man at his side raised the golden crane high, and then they charged right up that slope. Coming toward them was a huge enemy army spread out in wide ranks across the landscape, the sky lit up by the thousands of torches they carried. Tam Althor shouted for his men to line up and fire.
Loose!
Tam yelled, sending flights of arrows at the Sharans. Then arrows began to be returned in their direction, now that the distance between the two armies had narrowed. Arganda figured that the archers wouldn't be nearly as accurate in the darkness as they might have been by day, but that would be true for both sides. The two riversmen released a wave of death, arrows as fast as diving falcons.
Hold!
Tam yelled to his men. They stopped firing just in time for Lan's cavalry to hit the softened Sharan lines. Where did Tam get his battle experience? Arganda thought, thinking of the times he'd seen Tam fight. Arganda had known seasoned generals with far less sense of a battlefield than this sheepherder. The borderlanders pulled back, letting Tam and his men loose more arrows. Tam signaled to Arganda.
Let's go,
Arganda called to his foot soldiers.
All companies forward!
The 1-2 attack of archers and heavy cavalry was powerful, but it had limited advantage once the enemy set their defenses. Soon the Sharans would get a solid shield and spear wall up to deflect the horsemen, or the archers would pick them off. That's where the infantry came in. Arganda unhooked his mace. Those Sharans wore chainmail and leather, and raised it high, leading his men across the heights, meeting the Sharans halfway as they'd advanced to engage. Tam's troops were White Cloaks, Gil Danon, Perrin's Wolf Guard, and the Mayenner Winged Guard, but they viewed themselves as one army. Not 6 months ago, Arganda would have sworn on his father's grave that men such as these would never fight together, let alone come to one another's aid as the Wolf Guard did when the White Cloak forces were being overrun. Some Trollocs could be heard howling and being moved up alongside the Sharans. Light. Trollocs, too? Arganda swung his mace until his arm burned, then switched hands and kept going, breaking bones, smashing hands and arms until Mighty's coat was flecked with blood. Flashes of light suddenly launched from the opposite end of the heights toward the Andorans defending below. Arganda barely noted it, consumed by the fighting as he was, but something inside of him whimpered. Demandred must have resumed his attack.
"I have defeated your brother, Luz Theron,"
the voice boomed across the battlefield, loud as a crack of thunder.
"He dies now, bleeding away his mortality."
Arganda danced Mighty back, turning as a hulking Trolloc with an almost human face shoved away the wounded Sharan beside it and bellowed. Blood streamed from a cut on its shoulder, but it didn't seem to notice. It twisted, heaving a short-chained flail with a head like a log covered in spikes. The flail crashed to the ground right beside Mighty, spooking the horse. As Arganda fought for control, the immense Trolloc stepped forward and punched with its offhand, slamming a ham fist into the side of Mighty's head, knocking the horse to the ground.
"Have you any care for the flesh of this birth?"
Demandred thundered in the distance.
"Share you any love for the one who named you brother, this man in white?"
Mighty's head had cracked like an egg. The horse's legs spasmed and jerked. Arganda hauled himself to his feet. He didn't remember leaping free as the horse fell, but his instincts had preserved him. Unfortunately, his role had taken him away from his guards, who fought for their lives against a group of Sharans. His men were advancing, and the Sharans were getting slowly pushed back. He didn't have time to look, though. That Trolloc was on him. Arganda hefted his mace and looked up at the towering beast before him, whipping its flail over its head as it stepped over the dying horse. Never had Arganda felt so small.
"Coward!" Demandred roared. "You name yourself savior of this land? I claim that title. Face me, Do I need to kill this kin of yours to draw you out?
Arganda took a deep breath, then leaped forward. He figured that was the last thing that Trolloc would anticipate. Indeed, the beast's swing went wide. Arganda scored a solid crack at its side, his mace hitting the Trolloc's pelvis, crushing bone. Then the thing backhanded him. Arganda saw white, and the sounds of battle faded. Screaming, pounding feet, yelling. Screams and yells. Yells and screams. Nothing. Sometime later, he didn't know how long, he felt himself being lifted up. The Trolloc? He blinked, intent on at least spitting in the face of his killer, only to find himself being hauled into the saddle behind Alain Mandragoran.
I'm alive,
Arganda said. A wave of pain across his left side informed him that yes, indeed, he was.
You felled a big one, Gil'danin, Lan said, spurring his horse to a gallop toward their rear lines.
The other borderlanders were riding with them, Arganda saw.
The Trolloc hit you in its death throes. I thought you were dead, but I could not come for you until we had pushed them back. We would have been hard-pressed if that other army hadn't surprised the Sharans.
Other army?
Said Arganda, rubbing his arm.
Cawthon had an army lying in wait on the northern side of the heights. By the looks of it, dragon-sworn and a banner of cavalry, probably part of the band. About the time you were tussling with that Trolloc, they fell on the Sharan's left flank, breaking them all apart. It's going to take them a while to regroup.
Light,
Arganda said, then groaned. He could tell his left arm was broken.
Well, he lived. Good enough for now.
He looked toward the front lines where his soldiers still held their ranks. Queen Aleandra rode in their midst, back and forth through the ranks, encouraging them. Light. He wished she'd been willing to serve at the hospital in Mayenne. There was peace here at the moment. The Sharans had been hit hard enough that they had pulled back, leaving a section of ground open between the opposing armies. They probably hadn't been expecting such a sudden and strong attack. But wait. Shadows approached from Arganda's right, oversized figures walking from the darkness. More Trollocs? He set his jaw against the pane. He'd dropped his mace, but he still had his boot knife. He'd not go down without... without... Ogier, he realized, blinking. Those aren't Trollocs. They're Ogier. Trollocs wouldn't carry torches as these beings did.
Glory to the Builders! Lan called up to them. So you were part of the army Cawthon sent to attack the Sharan's flank? Where is he? I would have words with him.
One of the Ogier let out a rumbling laugh.
You are not the only one, Daishan. Cawthon moves about like a squirrel, hunting nuts in the underbrush. One moment here, another moment gone. I am to tell you that we must hold back this Sharan advance at all cost.
More light flashed from the distant side of the heights. The Aes Sedai and Sharans fought there. Cawthon was trying to box the Shadow's forces in. Arganda shoved aside his pain, trying to think. What of Demandred? Arganda could now see another swath of destruction launched from the Forsaken. It burned through defenders across the river. The pike formations had begun to shatter, each burst of light killing hundreds.
Sharan channelers in the distance on one side, Arganda mumbled, and one of the Forsaken on the other. Light. I didn't realize how many Trollocs there were. They're endless.
He could see them now, confronting Elaine's troops. Blasts of the One Power showed thousands of them in the distance below.
We're finished, aren't we?
Lan's face reflected torchlight. Eyes like slate, a face of granite. He did not correct Arganda.
What will we do? Arganda said. To win. Like to win, we'd need to break those Sharans, rescue the pikemen. They will soon be surrounded by the Trollocs, and each man of ours would need to kill at least five of those beasts. That's not even counting Demandred.
No reply from Lan.
We're doomed, Arganda said.
If so, Lan said,
We stand atop the high ground and we fight until we die, Gil'dannon. You surrender when you're dead. Many a man has been given less.
The threads of possibility resisted Rand as he wove them together into the world he imagined. He did not know what that meant. Perhaps what he demanded was highly unlikely. This thing he did, using threads to show what could be, was more than simple illusion. It involved looking to worlds that had been before, worlds that could be again, mirrors of the reality he lived in. He didn't create these worlds. He merely manifested them. He forced the threads to open the reality he demanded, and finally they obeyed. One last time the darkness became light, and the nothing became something. He stepped into a world that did not know the Dark One. He chose Camlann as a point of entry. Perhaps because the Dark One had used the place in his last creation, and Rand wanted to prove to himself that the terrible vision was not inevitable. He needed to see the city again, but untainted. He walked on the road before the palace, taking a deep breath. The butterchain trees were in bloom, the bright yellow blossoms spilling out of the gardens and hanging over the courtyard walls. Children played in them, throwing the petals into the air. Not a cloud marred the brilliant sky. Rand looked up, raising his arms, and stepped out from beneath the blossoming branches into the deep, warming sunlight. No guards stood at the way into the palace, only a kindly servant who answered questions for some visitors. Rand strode forward, feet leaving tracks in golden petals as he approached the entrance. A child came toward him, and Rand stopped, smiling at her. She stepped up, reaching to touch the sword at Rand's waist. The child seemed confused.
"What is it?"
she asked, looking up with wide eyes. "A relic," Rand whispered. Laughter from the other children turned the girl's head, and she left him, giggling as one of the children threw an armful of petals into the air. Rand walked on.
"Is this perfection for you?"
The Dark One's voice felt distant. He could pierce this reality to speak to Rand, but he could not appear here as he had in the other visions. This place was his antithesis, for this was the world that would exist if Rand killed him in the last battle. "Come and see," Rand said to him, smiling. No reply. If the Dark One allowed himself to be drawn too fully into this reality, he would cease to exist. In this place, he had died. All things turned and came again. That was the meaning of the Wheel of Time. What was the point of winning a single battle against the Dark One, only to know that he would return? Rand could do more. He could do this. "I would like to see the Queen," Rand asked of the servant at the palace doors. "Is she in?"
"You should find her in the gardens, young man," the guide said.
He looked at Rand's sword, but out of curiosity, not worry. In this world, men could not conceive that one would want to hurt another. It didn't happen.
"Thank you," Rand said, walking into the palace.
The hallways were familiar, yet different. Camlann had nearly been razed during the last battle. The palace burned. The reconstruction resembled what had been there before, but not completely. Rand strolled the hallways. Something worried him, a discomfort from the back of his mind. What was it? "Do not be caught here," he realized. "Do not be complacent. This world was not real, not completely, not yet." Could this have been a plan of the Dark One? To trick Rand into creating paradise for himself, only to enter it and be trapped while the last battle raged? People were dying as they fought. He had to remember that. He could not let this fancy consume him. That was difficult to remember as he entered the gallery, a long hallway lined with what appeared to be windows. Only those windows did not look out at Camlann. These new glass portals allowed one to see other places, like a gateway always in place. Rand passed one that looked out into a submerged bay, colorful fish darting this way and that. Another gave a view of a peaceful meadow high in the mountains of mist. Red flowers pushed up through the green, like specks of paint, scattered on the floor following a painter's daily work. Place. Rand passed one that looked out into a submerged bay, colorful fish darting this way and that. Another gave a view of a peaceful meadow high in the mountains of mist. Red flowers pushed up through the green, like specks of paint, scattered on the floor following a painter's daily work. On the other wall, the windows looked at the great cities of the world. Rand passed Tyr, where the stone was now a museum to the days of the Third Age, with the defenders as its curators. None of this generation had ever carried a weapon, and were baffled by the stories of their grandparents having fought. Another showed the Seven Towers of Melkir, built strong again, but as a monument, not a fortification. The blight had vanished upon the Dark One's death, and the Shadowspawn had fallen dead immediately, as if the Dark One had been linked to them all, like a fade leading a fist of Trollocs. Doors did not bear locks. Coinage was a nearly forgotten eccentricity. Channelers helped create food for everyone. Rand passed a window to Tarvalin, where the Aes Sedai healed any who came and created gateways to bring loved ones together. All had everything they needed. He hesitated beside the next window. It looked out on Roydion. Had this city ever been in a desert? The waste bloomed, from Shara to Kyrian. And here, through the window, Rand saw the Chora fields, a forest of them surrounding the fabled city. Though he could not hear their words, he saw the Aiel singing. No more weapons, no more spears to dance. Once again the Aiel were a people of peace. He continued on. Bandar Eben, Ebudar, the Shonchan lands, Shara. Each nation was represented, though these days people didn't pay much heed to borders. Another relic. Who cared who lived in what nation, and why would someone try to own land? There was enough for all. The blooming of the waste had opened up room for new cities, new wonders. Many of the windows Rand passed looked at places he did not know, though he was pleased to see the two rivers looking so majestic, almost like Manetherin come again. The last window gave him pause. It looked upon a valley in what had once been the Blasted Lands. A stone slab, where a body had been burned long ago, rested here alone, overgrown with life, vines, grass, flowers. A furry spider the size of a child's hand scurried across the stones. Rand's grave, the place where his body had been burned following the last battle. He lingered a long while at that window before finally forcing himself to move on, leaving the gallery and making his way to the palace gardens. Servants were helpful whenever he spoke to them. Nobody questioned why he wanted to see the queen. He assumed that when he found her, she would be surrounded by people. If anyone could see the queen, wouldn't that demand all of her time? Yet when he approached her sitting in the palace gardens beneath the boughs of the palace's Chora tree, she was alone. This was a world without problems. A world where people worked out their own grievances easily. A world of giving, not dispute. What would someone need of the queen? Elaine was as beautiful as she'd been when they'd last parted. She was no longer pregnant, of course. 100 years had passed since the last battle. She appeared to have not aged a day. Rand approached her, glancing at the garden wall that he had once fallen over, tumbling down to meet her for the first time. These gardens were far different, but that wall remained. It had weathered the scouring of Camelin and the coming of a new age. Elaine looked at him from her bench. Her eyes widened immediately, and her hand went to her mouth.
Rand?
He fixed his gaze on her, hand resting on the pommel of Layman's sword. A formal posture. Why had he taken it? Elaine smiled.
Is this a prank? Daughter, where are you? Have you used the Mask of Mirrors to trick me again?
It is no trick, Elaine,
Rand said, sinking down onto one knee before her, so that their heads were level. He looked into her eyes. Something was wrong.
Oh, but how can it be?
She asked. This wasn't Elaine, was it? The tone seemed off, the mannerisms wrong. Could she have changed so much? It had been 100 years.
Elaine? Rand asked. What has happened to you?
Happened? Why, nothing. The day is grand, wonderful, beautiful and peaceful. How I like to sit in my gardens and enjoy the sunlight.
Rand frowned. That simpering tone, that vapid reaction. Elaine had never been like that.
We shall have to prepare a feast,
Elaine exclaimed, clapping her hands.
I will invite Avienda. It is her week off from singing, though she is probably doing nursery duty. She usually volunteers there.
Nursery duty?
In Rodion,
Elaine said.
Everyone so likes to play with the children, both here and there. There is grand competition to care for the children, but we understand the need to take turns.
Avienda, tending children and singing to chora trees? There was nothing wrong with that, really. Why shouldn't she enjoy such activities? But it was wrong, too. He thought Avienda would be a wonderful mother, but to imagine her seeking to spend all day playing with other people's children? Rand looked into Elaine's eyes, looked into them deeply. A shadow lurked back there, behind them. Oh, it was an innocent shadow, but a shadow nonetheless. It was like that shadow behind the eyes of someone who had been turned to the Dark One. Rand jumped to his feet and stumbled backward.
What have you done here? He shouted into the sky. Shaitan, answer me!
Elaine cocked her head. She wasn't afraid. Fear did not exist in this place.
Shaitan? I swear I remember that name. It has been so long. I get forgetful sometimes.
Shaitan!
Rand bellowed.
I have done nothing, adversary.
The tone was distant.
This is your creation.
Nonsense,
Rand said.
You've changed her. You've changed them all.
Did you think that removing me from their lives would leave them unaltered?
The words thundered through Rand. Aghast, he stepped away as Elaine rose, obviously concerned for him. Yes, he saw it now, the thing behind her eyes. She was not herself, because Rand had taken from her the ability to be herself.
I turn men to me, Shaitan said. It is true. They cannot choose good once I have made them mine in that way. How is this any different, adversary? If you do this, we are one.
No!
Rand screamed, holding his head in his hand, falling to his knees.
No! The world would be perfect without you.
Perfect. Unchanging. Ruined. Do this if you wish, adversary. In killing me, I would win. No matter what you do, I will win.
Rand screamed, curling up as the Dark One's next attack washed over him. The nightmare Rand had created exploded outward, ribbons of light spraying away like streaks of smoke. The darkness around him shook and trembled.
You cannot save them.
The pattern, glowing, vibrant, wrapped around Rand again. The real pattern. The truth of what was happening. In creating his vision of a world without the Dark One, he had created something horrible, something awful, something worse than would have been before. The Dark One attacked again. Matt pulled back from the fighting, resting his Ashendari on his shoulder. Karida demanded the chance to fight. The more hopeless the situation, the better. Well, the man should be bloody well pleased with this. He should be dancing and laughing. He had his wish. like Buddy did. Matt sat down in a dead trolloc, the only seat available, and drank deeply from his water skin. He had the pulse of the battle, its rhythm. The best it played was forlorn. Demandred was clever. He had not gone for Matt's bait at the ford, where he had positioned a smaller army. Demandred had sent trollocs there, but held back his Sharans. Had Demandred abandoned the heights to attack Elaine's army, Matt would have swept his own armies across the top of the heights from the west and the northwest to smash the shadow from behind. Now Demandred was trying to get his troops behind Elaine's forces, and Matt had stopped him for the time being. But how long could he hold? The Aes Sedai were not doing well. The Sharan channelers were winning that fight. Luck, Matt thought. We'll need more than a little of you today. Don't abandon me now. That would be a fitting end for Matram Coffin. The pattern did like to laugh at him. He suddenly saw its grand prank, offering him luck when it meant nothing, then seizing it all away when it really mattered. Blood and bloody ashes, he thought, putting away the empty water skin, seeing only by a torch that Kareed carried. Matt could not feel his luck at the moment. That happened sometimes. He did not know if it was with him or not. Well, if they could not have a lucky Matram Coffin, they would at least have a stubborn Matram Coffin. He did not intend to die this day. There was still dancing to be done. There were still songs to be sung and women to be kissed. One woman, at least. He stood and rejoined the Death Watch guards, the Ogier, Tam's army, the band, the Borderlanders, everyone he had put up here. The battle had resumed, and they fought hard, even pushing the Sharans back a couple of hundred paces. But Demandred had seen what he was doing, and had started sending trollocs at the river up the slope to join the fray. It was the steep one, hardest to climb, but Demandred would know he had to pressure Matt. Those trollocs were a real danger. There were enough of them at the river to potentially surround Elaine and fight their way up to the heights. If any one of Matt's armies broke, he was done for. Well, Matt had thrown his dice and sent out his orders. There was nothing more to do but fight, bleed, and hope. A spray of light, like liquid fire, flared from the western side of the heights. Burning drops of molten stone fell through the dark air. At first, Matt thought that Demandred had decided to attack from that direction, but the Forsaken was still intent on destroying the Andorans. Another flash of light. That was where the Aes Sedai fought. Through the darkness and smoke, Matt was certain he saw Sharans fleeing across the heights from west to east. Matt found himself smiling. Look, he said, slapping Kareed on the shoulder and drawing the man's attention.
What is it?
I don't know, Matt said. But it's setting Sharans on fire, so I'm mostly certain that I like it.
Keep fighting!
He led Kareed and the others in another charge against Sharan soldiers. Olver walked hunched over under the bundle of arrows tied to his back. They had to have real weight, he'd insisted. What would happen if one of the Shadows people inspected the goods and found that his pack had light cloth stuffed in the middle? Satala and Fael didn't need to keep looking at him as if he'd break any moment. The bundle wasn't that heavy. Of course, that wouldn't stop him from squeezing some sympathy from Satala once they were back. He needed to practice doing things like that, or he'd end up as hopeless as Matt. Their line continued forward toward the supply dump here in the Blasted Lands, and as it did, he admitted to himself that he wouldn't have minded a pack that was a little lighter. Not because he was growing tired. How was he going to fight if he needed to? He'd have to drop the pack quickly, and this didn't seem the type of pack that let one do anything quickly. Gray dust coated his feet. No shoes, and his clothing now wouldn't make good rags. Earlier, Fael and the band had attacked one of the pitiful caravans trailing toward the Shadows' supply depot. It hadn't been much of a fight. Only three dark friends, and one oily merchant guarding a string of worn-out, half-fed captives. Many of their supplies bore the mark of Kandor, a red horse. In fact, many of those captives had been Kandori. Fael offered them freedom, sending them southward, but only half had gone. The rest had insisted on joining her and marching for the last battle, though Alvar had seen beggars in the streets with more meat on them than these fellows. Still, they helped Fael's line look authentic. That was important. Alvar glanced up as they approached the supply dump, the path lined with torches in the cold night. Several of those red-veiled Aiel stood to the side, watching the line pass. Alvar looked down again, lest they see his hatred. He'd known that Aiel couldn't be trusted. A couple of guards, not Aiel, but more of those dark friends, called out for the line to stop. Aravin walked forward, wearing the clothing of the merchant they'd killed. Fael was obviously Saldaean, and it had been decided that she might be too distinctive to play the part of the merchant dark friend.
"Where are your guards?" the soldier asked. "This is Leifa's run, isn't it? What happened?"
"Those fools,"
Aravin said, then spat to the side. Alvar hid a smile. Her entire countenance changed. She knew how to play a part.
"They're dead, where I left them. I told them not to wander at night. I don't know what took the three, but we found them at the edge of the camp, bloated, their skin black."
She looked sick.
"I think something laid eggs in their hollowed-out stomachs. We didn't want to find what hatched."
The soldier grunted.
"You are?" "Pansai," Aravin said. "Leifa's business partner."
"Since when has Leifa had a business partner?"
"Since I stabbed her and took over her run."
What information they had on Leifa had come from the rescued captives. It was thin. Alvar felt himself sweating. The guard gave Aravin a long look, then began walking down the line of people. Fael's soldiers were mixed among the Kandori captives. They tried